In this podcast, I'm going to tell the story, the tale, of three continents that had a race. And the continents are New Zealand, Australia, and India. And yes, indeed, these are continents on the move, having a race, so to speak, and we're going to talk about that. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. The aim for me is to get more fluent in explaining things, talking off the top of my head, communicating, and the aim for you, I suppose, is just to sit back and listen and just to pick up a few scientific points as I discuss it, because perhaps maybe as I explain things, I'll explain it in a different way than you would normally listen to. So the first off, we all talk about where the race starts. It starts around 300 million years ago in Antarctica. But before that, well, let's talk about the actual race venue, and that's the planet Earth. The planet Earth is a rocky satellite around our sun called the Sol. It's roughly 153 million kilometres from the centre of the sun out to us and Earth. And before you rush ahead and think, oh, the Earth's a sphere, it's actually a bit more of a pumpkin shape, or flattened, a bit like a Smartie. Not quite like a Smartie, but not like a billiard ball. It's actually spinning so fast that the equator is bulging out. I don't know if there's anything I could possibly do, but possibly a tomato might be a bit more like it, or an apple. It's definitely not going pear-shaped, but it's flattened at the poles as it spins around. In fact, the circumference of the Earth, pretty much by definition, when you look at it at the way the meter was defined, is 40,000 kilometres. And obviously in the equator, so if you get a piece of string at, say, on the equator, and you reel it out and walk all around the Earth and come back to that point, that is the circumference, the length of that string is 40,000 kilometres. And almost by definition, the Earth rotates once every 24 hours. In fact, it doesn't quite do that. It rotates every 23 hours and 56 minutes, and then it has to do a little bit more rotation to actually track onto the sun again, because it's moved a bit further anti-clockwise as you look from the northern hemisphere downwards into the galactic centre, our plane, our solar system plane of a rotation. So it means that the Earth is on the equator, you're actually spinning well over under 2,000 kilometres an hour, but over 1,000 kilometres an hour. That's pretty fast, and we use that effect to that extra effect to fling ourselves, our spacecraft, into outer space. So that's why we have launching pads in California, down in California, French Guiana, anywhere along the equator is fine. As you move away from the equator, it's a little bit worse. Australia used to have launch pads here in the central desert, but that's more to get polar orbits to send spy satellites over Russia. We used to have a large fraction of Australia was a satellite, a missile testing range called Woomera. If you look at the old pictures of Australia, don't go too far back, you'll be able to see the regions of Australia which were military bases for military space testing. And we, of course, had the American satellite stations, were all part of the American encirclement of Russia. And strangely, if you were to go further back, I think before World War II, you'd see an extra state in Australia. There was a short, for a couple of years, an additional state. The Northern Territory was divided up into two, and there was another state called Central Australia. That didn't last too long, but it's definitely there in the record books. But getting back to the place, we've got our planet, and I suppose the important thing to do is it's largely a cannonball. It's largely iron and a bit sandy and a bit like a cappuccino or an ice drift. The lighter material floats to the top, and the lighter material in our case is silicon dioxide. And I'm not going to call it sand. Well, we call it, the general term is sand. The actual scientific term for clay, sand, pebbles, cobbles, boulders, refers to the size of a particle rather than the composition of a particle. So in layman's terms, it's sand, silicon dioxide. This is lighter. And so it's floating on the froth. It's a froth floating on top of this iron planet, which is largely iron and magnesium. A bit of silicon thrown in there, and you go right down into the centre. You get the heavy nickel and iron in the centre, and oxygen up the top. It becomes a bit more sulphurous as you go down. And the planet is really... the best way to describe it is a huge... A solid sort of billiard steel ball bearing, a liquid, like, I suppose, the inner thing of a, I was just trying to think, a Lindor ball, you know, that soft chocolatey stuff, a bit of iron sulfide to make the liquid core. You've got the solid core, the liquid core, and outside that is something more close to plasticine. It's Play-Doh. It's a sort of a thick plastic material. It is sort of solid to walk on it, but if you stand up on it too much, it's a bit soft and squishy. It's quite literally squishy. So certain places are still rebounding. So England used to have, I don't know if anyone knows where England is. It's Europe is somewhere above Africa and all that type of stuff. I hope I can. So, but England, this place that we people in Australia have heard about, England is still bouncing up because the glaciers have pulled off. You've lifted the lid on England and it's still rising. Yeah, the English people are rising because their little island, their little muddy, wet island, is still popping up. Now we've taken the glaciers off it, it's still rising. And it's also happening... down in Antarctica and in Greenland, as the glaciers recede, the land pops up. So if you can imagine, it's sort of like a very firm mattress that we're on. Now, of course, people are quite incensed. They say, "Oh, look at all the Disney movies. You dig deep enough, you get molten lava." And you know, I can actually look in the little window into the Earth by going up to a volcano and looking in, I can see lava. Well, I'm afraid to disappoint you. It's more, I don't know, I suppose if you cook a piece of, cook something, the fluid comes out to the surface and builds up. If you're, I suppose, cooking meat, it's a slightly different thing. You get liquid building up. The soft rock, which really can't make its life in the... mantle, that's the area, that plasticine area, is can build up. It's got a low melting point. If it's got a low melting point, it turns liquid, it moves, it starts to move around through cracks in the earth and becomes a local pod of lava. So the majority of the earth is still solid, but you get these pods of lava. And if due to continental drift, which I'm going to tell you a bit about later, you've mixed that lava with some sand and some dead animals, it will become gooey and thick and bubbly and burst out pretty much like a science project or a shaken up Coke can, a shaken up Diet Coke with Mentos. It'll froth up. In general, the other volcanoes in the rest of the Earth, that's around the Belt of Fire, around... Oh, I think it's the Ring of Fire, but around Australia and in the Central Pacific, around Hawaii, you get the same process, sort of low melting point Earth, acclimating or trying to get under, being drawn under a heat source, sort of convection again, be drawn up, and it just comes up and oozes out, a bit like a horrible sore. It just comes out and weeps on the outside. That's called a shield volcano rather than an explosive cone volcano. Let's get back a bit. The reason that I'm saying this is that you've got a heat source in your central ball core, that nickel core, nickel and uranium core, I should mention, and that's one huge meltdown happening, a huge nuclear meltdown happening, and that's generating heat in the center of the Earth. This is producing convective heat. When I say convective heat, that is the material, it heats up, expands, reduces in density, and begins to float like a big, beautiful balloon. There's some other effects as well like that. It can actually pop a bit like popcorn. And so if it heats up and pops like popcorn, it begins to really uplift. When it really uplifts, it can actually affect the conductivity of the material and actually keep that heat underneath it, sort of like a hot air balloon with the heat underneath it all the time. So that convection, besides moving material, moves heat as well, and you get a beautiful uplift. And this uplifting will push through the center of the Earth, and this is an important thing, and start to go underneath these layers of scum. So the sort of like the froth are these floating icebergs, or they're actually sandbergs. And when I say sand, sand is very similar. Sand is silicon dioxide. On the periodic table, if you look one further up, it's carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide forms an ice, dry ice, and it's sort of like that. And so sand is really silicon dioxide ice. It can form crystals, it can form glasses, very much similar to ice. So as far as our temperatures, it's a bit like icebergs. We're on these sand bergs, the way to say it, which are these thickest continents. And as you've got convection, the scum forms together. We've got our Earth. It's rotating around the Sun in the solar system. And inside 360 or 380, I really can't remember. I'm talking off the top of my head here. Just decided to sit down and do a podcast. And I didn't know what I was going to talk about. I just sort of began talking around here. Okay, so we've got this heat source, and it's pushing through that plasticine layer, and it's creating a pressure, a separating pressure. Now, on the surface of the plasticine is a crispy layer called the asthenosphere. Now, the asthenosphere is a bit plasticine. It's got a lot of stress and tension in it, but it's also crispy, a bit like cornflakes or some sort of hard chocolate layer you've placed on the surface of the Earth. When I say chocolate, I'm giving the actual food analogy. Oh, I don't know. Is something... something rather... Bomb Alaska is the thing that comes to my head, that is this thing where you've actually got the soft, gooey ice cream on the inside, and you've somehow, I do remember people with torches heating it up and making it a nice crispy layer. We have in Australia the pavlova, which is basically egg white and sugar, and it's heated on the outside, so it's all gooey on the inside, but the outside is this crispy layer. So this crispy layer is the asthenosphere, and top of the asthenosphere is a super crispy rocks called the lithosphere. So this crispy layer is basically the crispy asthenosphere, means brittle. So it's a brittle layer, and so it feels the force underneath, breaks, and has restructures all the time. All the earthquakes we have on Earth are mostly from the asthenosphere. And this has started off this long time ago in Antarctica, called Gondwana Land. And it's a process called continental drift. Well, firstly, you could have, before continental disk, we have continental breakup. Now, continental drift, I think, was, I assume it must have been a Danish scientist, because he eventually died up in Greenland when he got to Quaterma Glacier, called Alfred Wegener. I assume he's Danish because his works weren't in English. They were, I think, in some other language. And he made the basic jigsaw level view, saying, look, the continents, their shape, because they're a jigsaw puzzle which comes together. So he had an observation without a supporting idea. And what I'm talking about now, so he had Alfred Wegener around 1910, I think I've got in my head. He proposed this, and of course, any proposal, you've got to be fair, there are thousands of proposals raining in from silly people, honest people who haven't read properly. So it's very hard to pick out what it's going to be going to be the next great big idea. So we had continental drift, and the process I'm talking about is the mechanism so far behind something called plate tectonics. This is a region of crispy planet which is moving, and the edge of the plate have been either built up or taken away, and your continent is beginning to move. And this is where we're going to take our story. So we have what is actually a very huge mountain range, a continent being compressed together, Gondwanaland. And it's done this many times before, because we can actually start to re-see that the continents we have are actually, in fact, smashed up bits of previous jigsaw puzzles. So Holmes said, here's a new jigsaw puzzle, and I've cut up the old jigsaw puzzle pieces and stuck them together randomly to make up new pieces. So it's a real mind-blowing thing to see. So we've got little bits. We've actually got a bit of the original Earth's crust sitting up in Western Australia, stuck in the middle of it. We've got heaps of unusual things. We've got the sandstone area, which I'm in at the moment, but at the back of us, we've got this huge limestone intrusion, which has got these fantastic caves just at the back. And there's caves. Australia's absolutely chock-a-block full of these limestone caves. This is sort of like tooth decay, walking inside giant tooth decay. Yeah, it's actually not teeth, but this is the calcium phosphate and calcium carbonate from old organisms just build up. So the old seabed, we have these old caves here. But getting back to, we're going to start off with the race, which I promised you, between Australia, New Zealand, and India. Now, if you said South Africa, India, Sri Lanka, and you just named the old British Empire places, we have lots of sporting events of playing British Empire games like cricket. So there's sort of a natural rivalry between all these places. But we're going to leave South Africa alone. That's a different continent. We're going to do India, Australia, and New Zealand. So Australia is moved off from Antarctica and is moving up towards Indonesia. It's beginning to crush Indonesia, and Australia eventually will crush all of Southeast Asia. It'll take probably another 500 million years, but we'll eventually get up there. I think we're moving something at a fairly good but modest clip of about a centimetre a year. We're moving north. At the moment, we've created Papua New Guinea above us, and we're causing basic havoc. But before, we were further south, and so we were much more wintry, a bit like Canada. And so at the moment, we're sort of drying out to being a desert, but we used to be covered with trees, and we'll talk about it a bit later. But we also were not as high as we used to be, because we're actually getting up, we're actually increasing in altitude. Previously, as we broke off. We were a huge mountain range. We began to break off and started to move north. And what that meant is that there was a rift valley and upwelling material mixed up and produced basalt, a seafloor. That seafloor has just been growing either side. So that crack, material on the Antarctic side of the crack is moving the crack further north at double the speed because of new material emerging on the Australia side of the crack. That's pushing it further forward. So the crack is moving, say, half a centimetre a year, but overall, because it's producing material equally each side, it's actually moving Australia about a centimetre a year. That's a fair amount of distance. I'm sure that can't be correct. We can't be moving that fast. That would be amazing. Probably a centimetre every 100 years. I'm really not sure. But it's actually a fairly good clipping speed. The important thing is that Australia started off, it sort of broke off Antarctica and just went plop under the water. And that meant that most of Australia, we had a bit of Perth up and a bit of basically a few islands stringing from Queensland down to Tasmania. And the central part of Australia was a gigantic sea. So the central part of Australia was a sea. And this is important, a big shallow sea. And back in the day when we were still in Antarctica, in that sea, the Antarctic sheet would rip off Antarctica, rip up bits of Antarctica, and in the ice there'd be bits of rock, and it would float out into the shallow sea, melt and drop these bits of glacial rock. And so I actually know the daughter of the geologist who's with Mawson. I was walking around the outback of South Australia and said, "That there, I've seen that. That's a glacial rock from Antarctica." He was with the original expeditions to Antarctica, and he would see these glacial rocks. And then he realised that all this land used to be under the sea, and these rocks here, there used to be glaciers. Even though it's stinking hot in the desert, there used to be glaciers there. That's to give you an idea. The point I want to say is around this this ocean, it's mostly limestone because it's old ocean rubbish. And so we've got these limestone caves, these limestone plains. There's a big, huge flat plain called the Nullarbor, no tree plain. It's completely flat plain because of these holes and caves underneath. But at certain points, there are fish graveyards. And you say, "Oh, tell me more about a fish graveyard. That's not so important." Well, what actually happened is with the water and the silicon and the fish bones used to remineralize as a fossil. Oh, okay, you've got some fossils, a large amount of fossils here in Australia. So this is the story of us going north and our race north. And these fossils remineralized actually remineralized with silicon and didn't form a crystal, but actually formed little silicon spheres. Again, that's not really good. It's a soft silicon spheres. But these silicon spheres restack together to form a natural diffraction grating, which is Australian opal. So if you're out there on the internet, look at Australian opal, and that really is the scientist's, or the second choice of a scientist, crystal or gem. So if you want to buy yourself a crystal, a gem, don't buy yourself a boring stoichiometric ratio of, say, topaz or ruby or a diamond, which just have to be the most boring. That's carbon. Buy yourself an Australian opal. You've got these little circles here, and you'll see it. You'll see it backed. It's a very beautiful piece of stuff, and it's a gem. It's also a fossil. It's got everything going into it. Australian fossils. We set up, and we went under the water for a while, and we We picked up our opals. This is to give you a general story. And we're slowly cruising north. We went over a hot spot on the Earth, which created a chain of volcanoes. So the oldest volcanoes in Queensland, the youngest volcano at the moment, is actually underneath one of our cities in Warrnambool in Victoria. Now, of course, it's one of these gentle volcanoes I talked to you about earlier, these sort of pussy volcanoes. So it's just oozing up underneath the ground. No one knows it's there, and just hot lava is going underneath. And again, if you go in Victoria, so Victoria, you'll have to look at the map. You can drive around, and these people know there's this clump of bushes. It's just a flat paddock, and you go up to this clump of bushes, and there's a hole, and underneath the hole is this long cave, these lava tubes underneath the surface. There's a few volcanoes around the place. Up here in the Blue Mountains, there's a few evidence of volcanoes. Of course, the volcanoes in the Blue Mountains are upside-down volcanoes. Of course, the heat, volcanic heat, comes up, hits the wet sandstone, creates an immediate explosion, so it blows up before it can actually be a volcano. So we have these upside-down volcanoes, which is the hole of the volcano where there's molten material is right down in a hidden valley. It's one of these mysteries up here in the Blue Mountains. So the Blue Mountains that I'm talking about is the stuff a little bit back from Sydney, Australia. Okay, and the hopefully here is I'm giving you a general story of a race between three continents and slowly ticking you up with scientific information. Just a review at the moment, the Earth is basically a plasticine type of cannonball. It's gooey, and the hot goo is causing the crust to crack and move around the surface. And Australia, India, and New Zealand were right next to each other in the continent. We broke off, and Australia's moved up, went underwater, but it's hit Southeast Asia, and it's just lifting up. It's actually quite high. If you actually look at all of Australia, I think it's around 600 metres up with there's rock before you actually start to move up. So the centre of Australia, so Australia's as flat as you can possibly imagine. I think a major river, the Murray River, takes a couple of months for the water to move through. It's the slowest possible river. It's a very flat place, Australia. But overall, we're lifting up. We were a sea, and we're lifting up. And we've got a few features happening. So that's Australia. So we've moved up. Now, obviously, we have beat New Zealand. Look at where New Zealand is. It's further south than us. So on the race, we've gone up to top. Now, New Zealand is actually two continents, and they're collided again. And they've actually collided again, creating the Himalayas of New Zealand. And the actual highest peaks of New Zealand is the actual part of New Zealand which is above the water. Now, I recommend anyone who's got Google Earth, so you download Google Earth, switch off the water, and you can have a look at the size of Australia. Australia has a little continental shelf around it. It's fairly interesting to look at. If you look at New Zealand, you realise that New Zealand is sitting on top of a submerged continent the size of India. So it's a fairly large subcontinent. In fact, recently, I suppose, amused to have scientists have discovered another continent. I think most people you've looked at the maps would say, oh, well, there is another continent that's actually submerged. So New Zealand's actually quite a large continent, and it's really going nowhere fast. It's moving up rather slowly, and it's still underwater, largely underwater. Now, what's important is, if you think of it as a submerged India, you can actually find islands poking up, and these are the most remote islands you could possibly think of. I don't think there's any there. Not some of them might be inhabited, but then it's sort of not a lot of nightlife going on in these islands. So you can go along and you can find these little mountain ranges which are on the submerged continent of New Zealand, away from New Zealand, way out into the ocean, these little mountain ranges are sticking up. But the majority of New Zealand is underwater, and it's on this huge continental shelf. So the continental shelf of New Zealand is quite amazing. So there we have it. Australia has actually beaten New Zealand in the race northwards. Then we come to India, which broke off. And of course you say, well, I know India's won. But India's story is a pretty amazing story. So because India has actually cheated. And sorry, when we talk about cheat, we talk about Australian cricket and match fixing and all this type of stuff. And Australia's beaten the world in match fixing, or not match fixing, and sort of bending the rules of Australian cricket. But India broke off. Now, it's taken a reasonable path of most continents up, and it actually, so if you've got this, the continent's as quite the, I think it's five times deeper than its high. So if you've a kilometre up, there's 5 kilometres below. If you're, I think under Mount Everest, there's a similar depth beneath. So you can imagine continents as these icebergs, and of course icebergs have a larger section underneath, and these are sticking down into this Pleistocene asthenosphere stuck, and it's slowly being pushed along. So the plate in front of them has been broken up, the plate on either side has been built up, and it's chogging along, but the continent itself is causing a lot of pressure, resisting what's going on. And India went over a hotspot and it dissolved its underneath of its continent. So India actually began to speedboat itself up. And so you watch it moving up slowly. It goes over the hotspot, and then animation, it just rushes forward. And there was a shallow sea, as continents tried to do in Asia Minor. A shallow sea, I think it's the Sea of Tithes, I think so. And so this sea was there, obviously beneath sea level at one point. Bear in mind, this is all happening on a pumpkin-shaped object, not a circular-shaped object. So you get the actual additional energy of lighter stuff being flung out into space. And so India went along and pushed the sea up, and the sea obviously is getting deposits. And so you look at Mount Everest, and at the top of Mount Everest there are seashells, and Mount Everest is a whole group of strata. And so it pushed all up, and all that Central Asia is from India beating Australia and New Zealand in the race northward. And I suppose there's a piece of human history here. This large area created these huge grazing lands in Central Asia, these nomadic lands. And these nomadic lands didn't necessarily have agriculture as we understood it. They were more hunter-gatherer, that they would farm. Nomadic means hunter-gathering. And these large lands, all these tribes going on, not much written history. So with no written history, they're not locked down into the civilization. And so you've got the steppes. And out of the steppes is this cradle of new peoples, the Madgars, the various people going into Europe, invading Europe, stirring things up. The Mongols, you've got, and all these different, the Cossacks, all these things come from the steppes. And that's all due to India smashing itself up to Asia. So the aim of this podcast, we're coming to the end of it, is to give you a little mental map of these continents, which you may not have thought about, happening, a bit more dynamism happening, to prompt you to go and look at a few things, possibly to remember, let's say the centre of Australia used to be a shallow sea, and again the Himalayas, the steppes used to be a sea, and to give you some sort of a dynamic map to what's going on, and to see that there's this idea of continental drift, but also plate tectonics, and underneath plate tectonics, planet dynamics, the heat of the planet pushing up, creating the plate tectonics, which creates the continental drift, which creates the geology that we see today, which creates the human history, which we are living through at the moment. So that's all I have to say for the moment for this Off the Top of My Head podcast. And I hope that I'm gradually improving. I will improve as we go along. But thanks for listening. And in the meantime, keep on doing science.